Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports, and good things come to those who wait. So all of you can finally listen to Jeff Rimebold from the shores of Hawaii. Jeff, it's been... We were just joking before we started recording. Joe Montana and Jerry Rice never had problems hooking up like this, but we couldn't get together yesterday, and then this morning we were supposed to start early. I've been stuck on a train, so here we are anyway. It's done. That's behind us. And I'm in rainy London, and you are back in your spiritual home, right?
Yes, I am, and it is beautiful here, although it's, I guess, it's almost 11 o'clock at night. What the heck time of day is it? Here's the thing. Jerry Rice and Joe Montana, he never did have a real big arm, but to throw one this far, Neil... You're talking about half a world away. So they could hook up, you know, they were only on 100 yards field. We're trying to get this done across, the world, globe, or whatever you want to say.
We are going to persevere from all those miles away, Jeff, and talk state of the franchise. But first of all, let's just go through a little bit of news. There's not a huge amount going on around the NFL. Obviously, we'll monitor in the coming weeks. If there's any fallout from the whole Tom Brady and his wife saying he had concussions, the NFL have said there's not much to investigate there at the moment. But one firm piece of news is that Garrett Blunt, the Patriots running back who had 18 touchdowns last year to lead the NFL, has signed a one-year deal with the Philadelphia Eagles. It's $2.8 million he can make with incentives. Jeff, this is the piece that was missing, wasn't it? Because they've got a lot of smaller backs in Philly.
Yeah, they needed a power back, and he's that guy. You know, he talked about the touchdown, and he's a great red zone runner, and he's a guy that can close games out when you're ahead, which will really help the young quarterback in Philadelphia. I think it's a great signing for the Eagles, and again, LeGarrette Blount lives to play another year, and some of these older running backs have had to wait a long time, Neil, but they're starting to hop off the board now, and so I think that's good for the Eagles, and I think it's good for LeGarrette Blount.
I guess the knock-on effect, there's always a knock-on effect, is probably signals the end of Ryan Matthews' spell in Philadelphia. Jeff, we felt like a talented player, but I think just, you know, Jim Kelly always said, your best ability is your availability, and he wasn't always there for the Eagles. Looks like they'll probably move on from him.
Yeah, you know what, that's kind of history. It's interesting, Neil, because we competed against him when he was at Fresno State, and he's a great talent. I mean, he has got all the things you look for in a back, but his durability and, you know, I don't want to say toughness because I think that's too strong a word. Mm. He just could not fight through injuries. He seemed to always be on the shelf. And, you know, like you said, one of the things is consistency of performance and the ability to perform week in and week out to be available to your team. Those are commodities that are really valued, and guys that get hurt, you know, it's not a good thing for any football team.
No, and that leads me on perfectly to just the last piece of news I wanted to discuss, really, Jeff. Ladarius Green, the big free agent signing for the Pittsburgh Steelers last year. They don't really dabble in free agency. They're much like the Green Bay Packers in that respect. And maybe they won't again because they got six games out of Ladarius Green at tight end. He was supposed to be the field stretching difference maker. He had ankle injuries, he had concussions. I mean, generally you've got to worry a little bit about his health and his longevity and what happens to him in the NFL now. But this is another warning because we all got very excited about free agency, and rightly so, because sometimes your teams will hit on something. Like the Giants last year, they got career years out of Olivier Vernon, Damon Harrison, and I'm having a blank. Denoris Jenkins, the cornerback. But it doesn't always work out, does it? And I think the Steelers have seen that now with Ladarius Green.
Well, there's a couple things you can guarantee you're going to happen in free agency. Number one, you're going to overpay for players. That's just the way it is. And number two, you're going to have guys that, you know, you have these kinds of situations. Now, in this case, it's really interesting. I think the Steelers, frankly, have to share some of the blame in this deal, because if you think about it, that kid played six games. He got paid $6 million. That's $1 million a game. Mm. And with very little production. And it wasn't like his injury. I mean, these injuries are so well documented and documented. And particularly when you start getting into a concussion deal, I just really feel like somewhere in that pure organization, there's got to be some conversations being had behind the wall this week about, you know, whoever was responsible for that signing is going to have some, as Ricky Ricardo used to say on the I Love Lucy show, you got some splaining to do.
Mm, absolutely.
So, yeah. But, you know, hey, here's one that I thought was newsworthy, you know, is the Jabril Peppers deal, where he refused to sign the agreement, the workout agreement, because I don't know if the fans really understand, you know, and you might want to explain something about how a player, once he's drafted, they have mini camps the week after the draft in a lot of cases. And those players, some of them, don't have their rookie contracts done, and they go out there and they really, they're practicing without a contract, which is a highly unusual situation.
Yeah, they sign a waiver, right, Jeff? So, like, even when you look at last year when Joey Bosa went deep into the summer with a holdout with the San Diego Chargers, he still was involved in those mini camps in May and June because he signed a waiver so that he could get in and get the work done. But Jabril Peppers is going to be an interesting one to monitor there because he had the diluted sample at the combine, which is his claim was he had too much water in his system. The counter to that is that you put all that water in your system to mask some kind of agent. So he's already in the in the program in terms of being monitored by the NFL for potential drug abuse. And you know, I read a couple of things where it's just like, well, why is he not signing it early? Because he signed it a couple of days later, and all those alarm bells and red flags get raised when you have a little bit of previous now, whether it was an accident, drinking too much water, or whether it was a malicious attempt to hide something. You know, it then makes you read more into when things like this happen a couple of weeks later.
You're exactly right. And I mean, the reality of it is, you know, he doesn't sign that agreement. They can't drug test him because he's not an NFL
right.
player. He's been drafted by an NFL team, but he's not underneath the umbrella of the league in terms of the drug testing program. And the guys who went through the guys that failed at the combine for, you know, too much water or the diluted sample, they get tested as if they had failed. And, you know how strong and how stringent that testing protocol is. So, there was a lot of speculation that the reason he didn't sign the thing was he wanted to continue to not have to go through the hassles of the drug test, which, interestingly enough, he really got prickly the other day and said, he actually told the media not to ask him any more questions about the drug issue.
Good luck with that one. Let's move on.
Yeah.
There was one other thing I wanted to just talk to you about, Jeff, and I saw this story and I tweeted it out yesterday, and it was the top 25 players in terms of what they will earn in 2017. It's produced by NFL.com. It's on NFL.com. The figures and facts come from overthecap.com, a good salary cap website that you can check out and see who's paid what. There's a few things interesting to me here, Jeff. First of all, top 10, all quarterbacks. So, I mean, probably no surprise there, ranging from Andrew Luck at the top, $24,594,000, down to Philip Rivers at number 10. But there was a couple I just wanted to pick out. Kirk Cousins is going to be the third highest paid player in the NFL this year, Jeff. $23.943 million. He's played the system, right? Because if your team's not going to commit full-time to you, you play the system. And Kirk has done that last year and this year.
Yeah, he and his agent, his people have handled it extremely well. And now you look at what he's going to draw this year. You know, you're talking about the third highest paid player in the National Football League now. is he the third best quarterback in the National Football League? We can sit here and argue that one all of you may want, but the reality of it is they did the deal. I mean, they understood how the program was, how the, you know, the NFL policy is on free agency and, you know, all of the things that go into it, and franchise tags and all of it. And they, you know, they put their client in the best possible scenario. I'd say more power to them.
Jeff, I mean, that's interesting we say, is he the third best quarterback? Because these kind of lists always highlight how some players have got good deals and others are probably having a deal just around the corner. So here is the list. Number one, Andrew Luck. Two, Drew Brees. Three, Kirk Cousins. Four, Joe Flacco. $22.133 million for Flacco. Five, Aaron Rodgers. Six, Russell Wilson. Seven, Ben Roethlisberger. Eight, Carson Palmer. Nine, Eli Manning. And 10, Philip Rivers. So I would say that to me, when I look at that list, Jeff, I can see why Joe Flacco gets some stick every now and then from Ravens fans, because he's being paid a handsome price ever since he delivered that Super Bowl.
Yeah, and, you know, again, the reality of it is the Ravens offered him the contract, right? He didn't go in there with a handgun and hold him hostage and hold the bank, you know. So, again, if anybody's upset with Joe Flacco, or the Ravens fans are upset with Joe Flacco, be upset with the cap management people and everybody that was involved in negotiating that contract, because that contract is one of the reasons why, and we talked about this last week when we went through the Ravens, is they have struggled to get the kind of players they need in there because that contract is like an albatross hanging around their neck.
Just a couple of other things on this list. Tom Brady was 13 on the list. The top non-quarterback was Von Miller, Jeff, at number 15. So there's still a quarterback's league, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, again, Von Miller probably should be, if you look at just what his worth is, probably should be up a little higher than some of those quarterbacks, maybe. Mm. But reality of it is, you know, it's a quarterback-driven league. It's always going to be that way. Who is the highest left tackle? That's one of the things that would fascinate me. I'd like to make the most money.
Don't ask me questions I don't know the answer to, Jeff. I'm glad you broke up a little bit then, because I didn't get to hear all your questions, so I can move on.
All right. Hey, where were you on that list? Where was Neil Reynolds in that list?
I came in at number 17. I get a call, $17 million a year from Sky. I don't know what they pay you, but yeah, those are the big bucks I make.
I know it ain't that, buddy.
Nah. All right, let's move on to our state of the franchise. We're going to do Tampa Bay, Denver, and then the first of our playoff teams from last year this week in the Detroit Lions. So Tampa Bay, their offense was 18th last year, 24th in rushing, 16th in passing. Defense was 23rd. They were 22nd against the run, 22nd against the pass. They were one of the feel-good stories of the NFL season. They finished 9-7. They had a real shot at the playoffs and then just fell short. They were quite close late in the season. They pushed Dallas hard on the road, and then they fell in that game and couldn't make it to the playoffs. Jeff, in a second, I want to start not on the offense, where they've made so many headlines, but I want to flip this around and start with the defense, because we talked about the Bucs a couple of weeks ago, and we said about, you know, all that they've added in free agency, and wow, what an offensive machine they could be in 2017. And you raised the concern that, you know, they might have to be because of the defense. But I went back and checked some stats, because I remember towards the end they were pretty good. There was a 6-week period, weeks 10 to 15, where they were second in the NFL with 15 takeaways, and they were second in scoring defense, 15 points per game. Have you seen signs of that defense coming to life, or do you still have concerns about, well, you've got to show me for a whole season?
Well, I think they're going to be better. I really do. And, you know, one of the reasons they're going to be better is, you know, they took Justin Evans at safety out of Texas A&M, you know, with the 50th pick in the draft. And you know, he's a need guy, Neil, but he's also a really good player. Hmm. And so I think that's going to be a guy that's going to – their safety situation is not great. There's no question about that. So he'll jump in there and he'll be a player for them right away. You know, you look at the defense and you see it's kind of an interesting group, because – you you got Noah Kump and you got Vernon Hargreaves, good young player, right? And then you got Daryl McCoy around them. So I think the potential is there for them to be a better defense. And I think they'll be a better defense as this offense continues to grow. You know, you play your best defense when the offense is on the field, frankly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that as this offense now gets more and more weapons around Jameis Winston, and, you know, obviously they had to be just out of their mind happy at 19 to see O.J. Howard still on the board. And so you go, I mean, you talk about best player available. You got to take that kid at 19. I mean, there were people that said he'd go in the top five. So, you know, you say, well, what do you need a tight end for? Well, you got to understand Cutter's approach. This guy loves tight end. And they may have right now the best tight end roster from one to five in the National Football League. And so I think, you know, they get him and then they go out and get Chris Goodwin, the receiver out of Penn State, who I think can be a great three for him right away. And you got DeSean Jackson in, you know, in free agency, and you know, he's gonna have some guys now.
Well, yeah,
so I think David Winston's primed to have a great year.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at the guys around him. You mentioned a couple of additions there, Jeff. O.J. Howard was the first round draft pick. They already had Cameron Brate, who had close to 70 catches last year. And really, for a number of years, the Bucs didn't have a middle-of-the-field presence, whether it was a tight end or a slot receiver. You mentioned Godwin, but he also joins Adam Humphries, who's a little bit Julian Edelman-like in that he makes plays in the middle of the field for them. And, of course, you've got Mike Evans, who's just a grown man at wide receiver. And DeSean Jackson adds the different element now with the speed. So, I mean, we'll get to the running game in a second, but suddenly the Bucs can throw up a jump ball that you can out-muscle the defensive back. They can blow past you with speed, but they can also attack the middle of the field, Jeff, which is something they didn't have a couple of years ago.
Exactly. And you know, you get into those personnel groups and you get into some of those exotic formations, and it really causes defenses problems. And it takes, you know, we've heard it so many times, and it's so true, Neil. A young quarterback's best friend is his tight end. And so now you look at the ability of DeSean Jackson to make plays. You know, like you said, they've got guys all over the field offensively, and their offensive line is freaking monstrous. I'm not talking about big. They are monstrous. J.R. Sweezy is the littlest one at 298. They don't have another guy that's under 310. They are huge. And so that's the kind of ball that Dirk Cutter wants to play. Here's my deal with Dirk Cutter. Dirk Cutter was a backup quarterback at Idaho State. His father was the head coach of the team. They were a smash-mouth team. He, you know, got into coaching, got the Boise State job. They ran the ball. They multiple tight ends, a lot of really cool stuff. Then he got the Arizona State job, same thing there, and then got into the NFL. So you know his background. You know that that's the kind of team that he wants to, you know, that multiple tight end, play action, throw it deep, you know, run the football, all of those things, which, again, what does that do? It helps your defense. It helps your football team. So I think this is a team. I really like this team. I think this team's on the rise.
Yeah, I agree. Let's talk about the quarterback, Jeff, who's got all these weapons to play with. When he first came out, he was the number one pick, Jameis Winston, and he's now 2 years into his NFL career. There were concerns when he came out, he's had a few issues in college. What's the maturity going to be like? He talked the first year in the NFL about how he enjoyed the grind of being an NFL pro and that it was the best year of his life. And he followed that up in year two with real leadership, I think. He was writing letters to the players in the locker room. I remember we had the Bucs-Cowboys Sunday night game on Sky, and we were teeing up and building up to that. And Gerald McCoy was giving a speech to the Bucs players on the field, and Jameis Winston was kind of hopping around like they had this sort of childlike glee, but like he really, really loves the game. I mean, Where do you think he is now in his development as a leader and as a player?
Well, I think, you know, and again, I'm going to go back to when we sat and talked about him as a player coming out of Florida State. Mm-hmm. the immaturity things off the field, because the things he did off the field were, frankly, immature behaviors, right? And he's a kid. You got to understand, even right now, he's only 23 years old, right? So he was a young kid that did some stupid things, okay? Who hasn't? Mm-hmm. My concern about him as a player was deeper than that. It was, I saw too many forced balls. I saw, particularly senior year, I saw him, you know, not protect the football the way you need to protect the football. And what's concerning to me still, when you look at him today, 4,000 yards last year, 28 touchdowns, but, Neil, 18 interceptions. Mm. When for him to get to be the next level guy, which I think he can be, then he's got to cut that interception total down, and particularly those red zone interceptions. One of the reasons why I like Mariota so much is he doesn't make mistakes in the score zone.
Right. Right.
He doesn't throw interceptions. Guys who throw interceptions in the score zone kill you. And I think Jameis Winston will go one of two ways. I think he will go and be one of the really fine quarterbacks in the league for, you know, the next 9 or 10 or 15 years, hopefully. Or he'll be another Dante Culpepper, a guy with a lot of tools and, you know, shows you that he can make some throws, but in the end never really does it like he projected to be able to do it. And so I think this is he's now at a point where he's got the head coach he wants. I mean, Lovie got fired. Let's be honest about this. Lovie got fired because Winston really was comfortable with their cutter, and they were afraid they were going to lose their cutter to another job. And so what did they do? They fired the head coach and kept the assistant, the offensive coordinator, because of the quarterback.
Yeah, Dirk Cutter was scheduled to have an interview with the Miami Dolphins, Jeff, and that prompted the action from the Bucs.
Exactly. So he's got everything he needs now. He's got his head coach. He's got, you know, initially it was Mike Evans. Now he's got Mike Evans, Deshaun Jackson, excuse me, and he's got Cameron Brate, and now you got O.J. Howard, and you know, like I said, he's got weapons around him now. And now it's time for him to take that step.
He won't have Doug Martin for the first three games. He's on a performance-enhancing drug suspension. When he's back, it looks like Dirk Cutter said it's going to be a run-the-ball-by-committee approach. We've mentioned some of the players on defense. They added Chris Baker on defensive tackle. You've said about Noah Spence, Jeff. Lavonte David and Quan Alexander can make plays. The last two Super Bowl representatives have come from the NFC South, Carolina and Atlanta. They couldn't, could they?
You know what? I tell you what, that division is going to be really fun to watch.
Yeah.
And could they? Yeah, I think they could. Because you know what has to happen? And I think this is what's fun about, we're at that point now in doing the state of the franchise. We're talking about teams that now are in position to make a run, right? Teams that can really get deep into the playoffs or even get to the Super Bowl, or frankly, teams that can be 6-10 and sitting on the outside too. Mm. So I think yes, this team can. You know, you talked about the running game and you know, Doug Martin's suspension, but you know, they went out with the 192nd pick and took that McNichols kid out of Boise State.
Yeah, fifth rounder, yeah.
And again, this has Dirk Cutter's fingerprints all over it. All right. Again, Idaho kid, the whole deal. I mean, it's just, he loves this kid. He's an every down back. The only thing that would be concerning a little bit, again, is durability. But you know what? There have been some pretty good backs come out of Boise State lately.
Yep. I think we're both going arrow up, aren't we, for the Bucs?
Yep. And I'm going to say this, all right? Bucs fans out there, they had maybe the best priority free agent signing in the entire NFL.
Oh, go on.
And they took a kid, and again, mark my words, because he's already, I've already heard him talking about him coming out of minicamp. They took a tight end from Laval University in Canada, a kid named Anthony Auclair, 6'4", 260-pound kid, that I saw in spring practice a year ago in Florida, and I called my friends in the NFL and said, let me tell you something. There's a kid up here at Laval that you guys better take a look at. And I'm going to tell you, that kid, and here we go, they got another tight end. But that kid, rare ability. And had he been in the United States, had he played at a U.S. college, he'd have gone in the first four rounds.
So he's fit.
I think that was a great sign.
Fifth on the depth chart at the moment, Jeff. He won't be by week one, right?
No, I don't think so. All they're going to, you know, now what if that again? Tight end's a lucky position now, right? Everybody mm-hmm. wants one.
Yeah.
And when you got five of them that can all play, what does that do for you? Now you are putting yourself in a position where you can deal one of those guys mm-hmm. and get picks or, you know, something that you need on defense or whatever. So I think the Bucs are sitting good.
All right, let's move on to the Denver Broncos then. And 2 years ago, Jeff, this team found a way to win it all with just about enough offense and a top-quality defense. 2016, they proved you can't win it all that way every year. So they were 9-7. They didn't make the playoffs. Offense was 27th in the NFL with Trevor Siemian at the helm. They were 27th in rushing. They really didn't help out the first year starter at quarterback. They had just 92.8 rushing yards per game. They were 22nd in passing. Defense was better. They were 4th overall. But they were 28th against the run, actually. They lost a couple of big run stoppers. Danny Trevathan was heading off to Chicago after the season. They were first against the pass, though. And I guess this is where this team's best, isn't it, Jeff? When they get out to a lead and then Von Miller, now Shane Ray, can pin their ears back and Aqib Talib and Chris Harris, they can go hunting for footballs in the secondary.
Yeah, no question, because they've got probably the best group of corners in the league. But to me, when you look at this football team, Neil, I think it's a team in real transition. And I think it's a team that is going to be really, really interesting to watch. You're talking about a first-time head coach, right? Vance Joseph played for me in NFL Europe. Mm. Right? That's how young he is, right? Now, that doesn't mean he can't do it, and he's a highly respected guy. I'm just telling you, until you sat in that corner office, until you dealt with the three or four lightning bolts that are going to hit you over the course of the season, it's a whole nother deal. In addition, they've got new coordinators on both offense and defense. Mm. So you got a first. Now, Mike McCoy, I think, is a really smart hire for them, right? But you also got Bill Woods, who's a first-time coordinator ever on defense. And now, again, Joe Woods was there as the secondary coach, but the reality of it is, when you get into those games where it's all falling apart around you, right, and those players are going to look at you and they want answers right now. With Wade, it was never a question, right? So, again, this is going to be a baptism by fire for these young guys, and doesn't mean they can't do it. I don't want to make it sound like that, but I just say this is a team that, I mean, that's a lot of upheaval now.
Yeah, let's start on the offense then. There was 27th. They have upgraded the offensive line. So Menelik Watson comes in at right tackle. They added Ronald Leary from the Dallas Cowboys, and they drafted Garrett Bowles from Utah as the tackle in the first round. So the offensive line should be better. But Jeff, you've got to start with the quarterback. I mean, who's going to be the quarterback? Is it Trevor Siemian? Is it Paxton Lynch? They drafted Chad Kelly in this year's NFL draft, Jim Kelly's nephew. But you know, Paxton Lynch was a first rounder last year, and it looks like it's going to be an open competition. I mean, stick a finger in the air and take a guess, I think.
Right now. But let's be honest about this team, right? They're two playmakers. They're two best playmakers on offense, Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas. Right, and both of those guys are 8 years now in the league. Right, the time's starting to tick on those guys, and I'm, you know, again, how I feel about Emmanuel, but I'm just telling you, that's tough when you've got young quarterbacks and there's not a lot around them. And you go out and find Jamaal Charles, hoping that you'll get the Jamaal Charles that was so dynamic in Kansas City, but there's no guarantee there either. So I agree with you. I think Simon Menelik was really, really critical because he can be that right tackle, that physical, tough guy, and help him run the football. And Garrett Bowles was probably the best left tackle in the draft. So they'll be better, but again, somebody's got to be able to throw it on third down, because you look at this team last year, when they got behind on the sticks, Neil, or they got behind in games, it was ugly.
Jeff, I look at Demaryius Thomas, and maybe I'm still tainted by watching him from the sidelines in that Super Bowl against Carolina. But I interviewed him at the Pro Bowl, and he looks, when you stand next to him, he looks like a tight end. And I'm like, I know your numbers are good every year, but I feel like this guy just hasn't ever taken over a big game, and you can get to him. People have shown they can get to him for his size. I mean, crikey, Seattle did it in that Super Bowl we sat and watched together, didn't they? Well, in New York.
Yeah, I mean, when you, like you say, when you walk up next to the guy, you go, man, that's the way, I mean, that's the way you want him all to look.
A thoroughbred. And,
but, yeah, I mean, but it doesn't translate into the physical dominating player that his body says he should be. Now, he is tremendously talented player.
Mm-hmm.
And like he and Emmanuel really are the two playmakers that this football team has. But he's not really gotten to that elite level of receiver. And for, you know, as much as, like I said, as much as I love Emmanuel and as many things as he does, again, you know, you want more. You want a number one who's a guy where you go, man, there's no way. We got to double that guy every down.
Mm.
You know, and so that's where I think this team, you know, they got to find some playmakers. They got to find some playmakers on offense. And no matter who's playing offensive line, they got to find some playmakers, and they got to make a decision at quarterback. I think it'll be Paxton Lynch, personally. I just believe that. I think that the kid's upside is so high. And, you know, Trevor Siemian is a guy that's a, here we use that term, more of a game manager kind of deal. He's smart. He can make tight throws. But, again, he doesn't have that dynamic thing that you're looking for. So my guess would be it's going to be Paxton Lynch as time plays through.
You've got to feel that way, Jeff. If Siemian was that one-year caretaker and was okay, but I think we're going to say he was average. You know, he was an average quarterback, and the numbers kind of back it up. The 22nd passing attack in the NFL. You got to think that if it's an even competition going in, and they come out with it even, and there's not much between them, then you got to go Lynch, because they invested a first-round pick in him. And whether that's, you know, they say, oh, there's no kind of, some teams like to say there's no hierarchy in their team and everything's got to be earned. But the reality is, surely there is some kind of vested interest in getting a first round draft pick on the field.
Yeah, and I think, I agree. I think that the approach last year probably was nobody could foresee that the offensive line was going to go south like he did.
Right.
And that the defense would be so good that all he really needed to do, because now remember, The Peyton Manning that we saw at the end of the season in that Super Bowl run was a very, very pedestrian quarterback by NFL stand. So I think they truly believed, I think John Elway believed that Siemian was going to give them the best chance. He could manage games, not make mistakes, and that, you know, that they would win it on defense. And but, you know, then the running game goes south, and the offensive lines have patchwork, and then you have to try and throw it, and now it, you know, it becomes, like you say, problematic.
CJ Anderson will be back at running back. Jamal Charles is an addition. We've got to see what's left on the tires. Anderson gets injured towards the end of seasons because he's a very physical runner, but we've got to wait and see kind of what Jamal Charles brings to that. Jeff, I want to just flip over to defense, because as we look at this and I look at the numbers again, until the Broncos stop the run, then that's your safest way to attack this Denver defense, isn't it? To just kind of, you know, if you're looking and saying, well, they're 28th against the run, well, we'll pound it. We'll pound, because, you know, otherwise you're bringing Von Miller into the game. You're bringing Aqib Talib. Excellent safeties in TJ Ward and Darian Stewart. I mean, generally, you don't want to be challenging the Denver Broncos pass defense.
Absolutely not. When you look at this group of corners, now, I'm going to pull some names right now. I'm going to do Chris Harris, Torian Nixon, Aqib Talib, Bradley Roby. You got four of them. Now, everybody's dying trying to get two. And then the teams that really think they got it going on have three. They got a great slot corner. Well, these guys got four of them. And then, you, like you say, you put those two safeties on top of them, and that is a nasty bunch. But, again, this is where we go back to that topic that you and I talk about all the time, complementary football. Well, if your offense isn't getting it done, right, now you don't have the ability to play from ahead, right? And if you're an opponent coming in to play the Broncos, what do you want to do? You want to keep the game close. You want to bang away and bang away and bang away at that off, at that defensive line, and not let, you know, not let yourself get behind on the sticks where Shane Ray and, you know, those guys, Ron Miller can just raise havoc with your tackle. Mm. So, you know, I think they have to become a better complementary football team for those things to happen.
Jeff, is this still Wade Phillips' defense in look and feel? What do you know about Joe Woods? How is he going to change this? Because all coaches like to put their stamp on it. Or is this, at first glance, is this going to look very similar to what we've seen in Denver in recent years?
Well, I tell you, this is really interesting to me. I mean, this is fascinating to me because, you know, Vance and Wade have a hit, and Wade was not offered an opportunity to come back. His contract wasn't renewed. Hmm. So you look at that and you begin to now immediately shake your head a little bit, or scratch your head a little bit. And now Joe Woods had been there as secondary coach, but Joe Woods' background prior to that was with Minnesota and, you know, as a secondary coach in that Tampa 2 scheme. Hmm. And, you know, out of, you know, his background is out of the Lovie Smith kind of deal, you know, the Tampa 2, fourth down guys, and, which is not at all what Wade was. Wade was a, you know, 3-4 guy, and he was going to play man-to-man, and he was going to get after your quarterback. Well, that's not kind of where Joe's from. Now, he may, I'm sure he'll keep as much of the scheme and terminology as he possibly can. But, you know, I think it's, I just really think this is one of those teams that was happy enough to move everybody along and say, you know, we want to, you know, we're going to, it's a brave new day and let's hope. So it's going to be interesting to watch.
We always fall into that trap of sometimes overpraising players that are in the modern era, Jeff, and you know, you've got to compare era to era. But when we look at Von Miller just finishing up with the Denver Broncos, is all-time greatness among us when we look at Von Miller?
I don't know how you'd not say that the guy's not one of the... I mean, look at his numbers. Just look at his numbers. And, you know, the way he can dominate a football game. And you know, you're dominating a game from the outside linebacker position. And so you say, well, slide the protection to him, you know, run the ball away from him. The guy gonna make plays no matter what you do. Mm. I mean, unless you figure out a way to run your offense in the parking lot, he's gonna stop me. He's just gonna raise hell. That's just what he does. And so I think in my heart of hearts, he's as good as I have seen at that position. You know, are you talking about like Kevin Green and those kinds of guys? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I really think he's going to be a Hall of Famer one day.
I feel like with some of these teams, when we've done the arrow up, sideways, arrow down thing over the entire off season, Jeff, I feel like we could say it with real certainty. That's an arrow up team. That's an arrow down team. I feel like there's so many pieces of the Broncos that could make them an arrow up team. So if the offensive line comes together, if they settle on a quarterback, if that defense can stop the... So at the moment, I feel like they're kind of where they were last year, but with the potential to be better than where they were last year. What do you think?
Well, they should be better than where they were last year because they'll be healthier and all that other stuff.
Right.
But again, people got to understand, the first thing you got to do is win enough games to get to the playoffs. And you're talking about a team that plays in a very tough division. I'm talking about a very tough division. And so it's going to be a dogfight for them. I really think it's going to be a dogfight for them. And like I said, I would not be surprised if in one case you see, you know, this team go 12-4, or you see this team go 6-10. I mean, I can see it both ways. I think it's going to be how healthy they stay, how, you know, if, you know, fans can, you know, find a way to, you know, get his message to the player in a way that they will take. You know, again, it's so fragile with players. When you have coaches like Wade who are so well loved by those guys, and then they're gone. Well, you know, here's the way they look at it. It's like, okay, show me what you got.
Right.
Right. I know the last guy we won a Super Bowl with. Now,
yeah.
What are you selling?
Yeah. No. Yeah, that guy got me a ring. Oh. I want another one.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be a fascinating year in Denver. And, again, I'm anxious to see it unfold.
All right, let's move on to our final team on this week's Inside the Huddle. It's the Detroit Lions, and led by Jim Caldwell. They went 9-7 last year, making a return to the playoffs. They lost to Seattle in the wild card round. They opened 1-3, then won 8 of their next 9. And then ended with 4 straight losses, which included that first round playoff exit. So they are a team that can blow hot and cold. They haven't won a playoff game since 1991, but they were exciting to watch last year. Matthew Stafford recorded an NFL record 8 fourth quarter comeback wins. Jeff, 2017 Lions, be consistent. That's it, isn't it? That's what it comes down to, the consistency.
I'm going to tell you something. They would be hard to watch. If you're a Lions fan, it's got to be hard to watch because, you just don't win Super Bowl coming back that many times late in game.
No.
You know, having to put yourself through those kinds of situations. Now, I think this is a top 10 potential team, right? The thing that's the toughest when I think about the Lions, Neil, you're talking about, you mentioned they hadn't won a playoff game since Barry Sanders or something.
Yeah.
Crazy deal. But this is a team that has decades, right? Not years, decades of frustration, decades of futility. And you've had numerous guys go in there. You've had all kinds of change. You've had all kinds of general managers, head coaches, all of it. And I think what happens when you get in an organization like this, the hardest thing to do is just change the chemistry, change the belief system that, hey, yeah, we are good enough, and, yeah, we should win our division. But I don't sense from this team that they believe they can walk into beat Green Bay. I mean, you know what I mean? You gotta have that
swagger. I think they got a great quarterback and they got a bunch of pretty good players, but I don't see a team that's like got that edge, you know, that makes you go woof.
No. Let's have a look at some of the numbers then. So offense was 21st, 30th in rushing. They had just 81.9 rushing yards per game. They do hope to have Ameer Abdullah back this year. He missed much of last year through injury. They'll try and team him with Theo Riddick. They were 11th in passing. Defense was 18th. 18th against the run, 19th against the pass. Jeff, I think you've just hit on a really great point because I'm actually a big Jim Caldwell fan. And Jim Caldwell has preached to this team accountability, to be good people, because there were times when the Lions under Jim Schwartz, they were kind of a little bit maverick, but they almost need all of what Jim Caldwell gave them with a little bit of what Jim Schwartz was selling when he was the head coach, because I think you've hit the nail right on the head. I mean, did they march into Seattle last year thinking they could win in the wild card round? I mean, that was quite a competitive game for the first half, but you never, ever felt like the Lions were going to win it.
No, and that's what I'm saying. It's such a fine line. I mean, it really is such a fine line, because you talked about when Schwartz was there, what did they all say about the Lions? Undisciplined, shoot themselves in the foot, take penalties at the wrong time, you know, yada, 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 yada. Mm. So Caldwell comes up in and cleans it all up, but now you wish you had a little of that chip on your shoulder, a little of that swagger back again, right? So you look at this team and you say, offensively, they'll be better. I agree with you 100%. When Abdullah comes back, Abdullah's, I think, a really fine back. Mm-hmm. When Abdullah comes back, and Theolytic's back, and you're not playing a guy that should be covering kicks.
Zach
Zenner. Starting tailback. Yeah. So now your quarterback doesn't have to do every single thing, right? I thought the team drafted well. I thought they drafted really well.
Yeah, a couple of defensive players early on. Jared Davis from Florida and Tease Tabor at corner, also from Florida. Just going back to the offense there, Marvin Jones is an example, Jeff, of that consistency they're looking for. Came out of the gates like a house on fire in 2016 and then faded down the stretch. And you want that week-to-week consistency. As we move on to Matthew Stafford as well, I mean, he kind of faded down the end, but he had that thumb injury, didn't he? He had a sort of significant injury. I'm with you. I mean, I don't like to throw the word great around too much, but in terms of today's NFL, if you're going to ask me to select a list of quarterbacks, Matthew Stafford for me is going to be quite near the top, and I'd almost use the dreaded elite word. I mean, I don't know if he's quite there because obviously he doesn't have the pelts on the wall, as they call him. He doesn't have all those Super Bowls that Tom Brady has. But, you know, I think there's a quarterback there who's talented enough to take this team to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I agree. And I think right now, you know who his career kind of parallels in my mind?
Mm-hmm.
He is, you know, that gunslinger they got out there in Los Angeles, San Diego. I mean, you're talking about a guy that can make all the throws at that rate. He's such a great competitor. He, you know, all of the things that we say about Matthew Stafford. And then you go, but he has to do too much, you know? And, you know, you think about it and you just go, get the kid an offensive line to protect him. Get the kid look at the receivers, right? Marvin Jones, I like Marvin Jones. I'm with you, right? Golden Tate. Is Golden Tate an elite level receiver in the National Football League, in your opinion?
No, he's a good number two, right?
Yeah, he's a good player. He's a good player. Eric Ebron needs to mature a little bit and I think take a step because he's talented enough. Get those running backs back and don't ask Matthew Stafford to make, don't be Philip Rivers.
Right.
You understand?
Yeah, absolutely.
You watch Philip Rivers. Philip Rivers, if Philip Rivers does every freaking throw, the Chargers don't win.
Well, and that's the thing, Jeff. And you look at Rivers' career. If I'm going to have a picture in my mind of a snapshot of Philip Rivers' career, it is making some incredible throws. It is 99% of his games going down to the wire. And he wins some and he loses some. Now, last year for Detroit, Matthew Stafford won those games that went down to the wire. But you can't win that way every week. So they do need to have more and they do need to be a little bit less dramatic, if you like. Just you mentioned the offensive line. Two, on paper, really good additions. TJ Lang at guard from the Green Bay Packers and Ricky Wagner, the right tackle from Baltimore. Now you can say, well, okay, you're overpaid again in free agency, but looks like they have upgraded that front.
And again, I think that's critical. That's critical. This team needs a running game. They need to protect Stafford. Because one of the things that is so impressive to me about Stafford, Neil, is his toughness. I mean, he's taken some of the shots like Andrew Luck's taken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's unfortunate because, you know, there are other guys that probably wouldn't have got up from a lot of those hits. And that guy had that bad thumb and just kept slinging it and kept slinging it and kept slinging it at the end of the year. So nobody going to question Matthew Stafford's toughness. But again, you just, at some point, you gotta protect the guy.
Jeff, you are super positive, and I've always felt you're the sort of guy who could sell sand to the Arabs, right? So I want you to sell this Detroit Lions defense to me, because I looked down the numbers. Takeaways last year, just 14. They were 28th in the NFL. They were 30th in red zone defense. Sacks, they had just 26 on the season, tied 30th. They were 31st in defense on third downs, and they allowed quarterbacks last year to complete a rating of 106.5. That made Detroit the worst in the NFL in that category. And I looked down the list of players, and you know, I like Darius Slay at corner, and Ziggy Ansah can be good if he gets himself fit and healthy again. I mean, you're going to have to hope this Jarrad Davis kid comes in and plays really well. I mean, sell it to me, Jeff. Come on.
Well, you know, I just don't know when they lost Ndamukong Suh, and, you know, Floyd Nada was supposed to be the guy to come in and, you know, be that guy. I think they lost way more when they lost Ndamukong Suh. I think this football team lost way more than just a great player at defense.
They lost some of that edge we were talking about.
You're exactly right, Neil. You're exactly right. Haloti Ngata's a great football player. He's tough. I mean, he's got all the puffs. But I don't know if he brings you that nastiness that you need to have, frankly, on defense. Mm. And that Ndamukong Suh, you know, he was more than happy to play that role. And so, you know, you look at those guys, and it's interesting you mentioned the two of them that I had written on my sheet. Ziggy Ansah has, I don't want to use my sheet, there we go with the elite word again, but Ziggy Ansah sure has enough pass rush ability to be a, you know, 10 sack a year guy. Mm. He just has to get healthy and play. And, you know, again, he doesn't have a great deal of football background. You understand? He played, he went to BYU to be a basketball player. So, you know, his best football should be still out in front. I love Harry. I really think he's a good guy. He's a good football player. Mm. And, you know, now where we can kind of talk about those young kids that they drafted, because, you know, you look at the first round, you know, they go out and take the Davis kid, the linebacker from Florida. You know, he'll walk right into DeAndre Levy's job. He's tough. The thing that I've heard said about the kid is he's a tremendous leader. I don't think there's any question about starting rookie. And, you know, the interesting thing about it is they took that kid when Reuben Foster was on the board.
Mm.
You know, so that's interesting. That says an awful lot about how they feel about Jarrad Davis' leadership and toughness and what the intangibles that he brings. Because, again, this is an organization, and you talked about it just a second ago. Caldwell, that was, when they brought Caldwell in, that was the edict from above, from the Lions front offices. We're going to become a quality team. We want quality individuals. You know, I think that's the way that they've drafted. And then, like you say, Jalen Taylor gives you that corner that can, you know, I think, I hate that term shutdown, but certainly here's a guy that many people thought going into the senior year was going to be a first rounder. Mm. He's had a couple things, you know, didn't run very well at a couple timings, and that really hurt his stock. But if he plays like he's capable of playing, then again, I think that's a huge hit for them, because now they've got a guy to play on the other side from Darius Slay.
Jeff, I hope I'm not revealing state secrets here, but when we sit next to each other in the Sky Sports studios, and sometimes we're watching Lions games, and they'll start raving about Terrell Austin being one of the hot head coaching prospects around the NFL. He's the defensive coordinator of the Lions. And sometimes you raise your eyebrows. You don't say anything, but you just sort of raise your eyebrows. Is Terrell Austin a head coach in waiting? Is he a really good defensive coordinator? Where do you stand on this guy who's overseeing this defense that had all these problems a year ago?
Well, I think, you know, again, it's all of us in the business coach our best ball when we got the best players.
Right.
That's the way it works.
Gotta have the horses.
But, the reality of it is, right now it's hard to tell, because he had a bunch of guys hurt, and you know the whole thing with no line. I mean, they played with really no linebackers after Levy got hurt. You know, so I just really think that, you know, I'm so initially skeptical of these guys being anointed as the next guy, mm-hmm. right? I mean, like,
it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy almost. They are because they're mentioned all the time.
Yeah, because somebody picks it up, and then, and let me tell you something, the way it works in the business, right? Agents, each, all of these guys have agents, and every one of their agents is doing what? They're hustling them, trying to make them the next guy, trying to, you know, this, and, yeah. you know, get their, trying to get new, you know, newspaper guys to, hey, I'll do you this little favor if you'll write this piece on my guy, and all that. So it gets kind of crazy, right? And you look at a guy, like, for example, Vance is a perfect example, Vance Joseph. All of the guys that have won, you know, all kinds of games in the NFL don't get a job, and he gets a job, and he's never coached one down as a head coach in the National Football League.
Mm.
Well, you know, that's what I'm saying. So just, I just think, yeah, Terrell Austin, I think, got a future in as a head coach, yes. But right now, I don't know if that's the guy I'm going to have to, you know, turn my organization around.
Mm. With the Lions, then, finishing up, they were in the playoffs last year. Tough division they're in to make a return this year. Is it an arrow up, sideways, or down for the Lions for you, Jeff?
You know, to me, I got to give them an arrow sideways. I just really think there's still so many questions. And like you say, there was that run in the middle of the season where it was almost like magical,
mm-hmm.
right? That doesn't happen very many times. And so I think this is a team that, you know, could finish first in their division, or they could be third in their division. You know, I think they'll beat the Bears, but I mean, can they beat the Packers? Can they beat a Vikings team that, you know, hopefully is healthy and better in the offense? Well, I think it's going to be interesting to see.
All right. So that concludes our State of the Franchise chat for this week. Next week, we'll pick up with the Miami Dolphins. They're getting an arrow up. I'm telling you now, Jeff, that's done. So we don't need to talk about them. The New York Giants and the Oakland Raiders. You see how quickly I can get back on that bandwagon.
Hey, wait a second. Now, let me just say something. It's the Giants.
The Dolphins and the Raiders.
So we can spend about 30 seconds on the ball, on the Giants, and spend the rest of the time on your team and my team.
Yeah, there we go. Perfect. That sounds like a good deal. Let's take a couple of quick questions.
I can hear the Giants fans just screeching it.
They are. Yeah, they're going to chase you down. Where are you? Are you in some bar on a beach, by the way? It's late at night there in Hawaii.
No, you know what? I'm going to tell you something, my friend. It is so late here, I couldn't even find a bar that was open.
Oh. My favorite podcast of last year was when you were in Hawaii late at night, and we started it in a bar. Then I think they kind of in the background asked you to leave. Then the sort of middle part of the podcast was you walking along the beachfront, and then you walked past some car that was being broken into, and the alarm went off. It was brilliant. It's all top quality podcasting, that was. Let's take this question from George Swift. He says. Well, it's a two-part question. He says, with the Eddie Lacy bonus coming to light, Jeff, what are the most unique bonuses you know of? And does Eddie Lacy's weight show a complete lack of desire? So Eddie Lacy had to come in under, what, 260 pounds or something like that? He basically did it by 2 pounds, and he gets his bonus from the Seattle Seahawks. Jeff, I guess most bonus-related things like that with players, it is sort of keeping the guys in shape, isn't it? You tell us.
Yeah, you know, it's sad that it has to be that way, but the reality of it is some of these guys just don't have the ability to control themselves. And you know, I saw Eddie Lacy had a campaign going of Eddie Lacy won't quit, don't you quit, and trying to get other people to lose weight, which is all great stuff, right?
Mm.
But, you know, it's almost like I shake my head when I think you're a professional football player. You're making billions of dollars, and you have to fight and scratch and claw to have the self-discipline to, hey, you know, there's two words that would really help Eddie Lacy.
Go on.
I'm full.
I knew you were going to say
that. Those two words. I'm full.
Well, Jeff, we laugh, right? Okay, we laugh about this, but when you look at it from the outside as a layman and somebody who's not in the NFL, right? Everybody from any walk of life have been in this situation before in their life where, all right, I'm going on holiday. I'm going to be on the beach. I'm going to try and lose a bit of weight. And you don't have to be a superhuman individual to drop a bit of weight. You just put less in your mouth than you did before, and you do a little bit more. And it actually, you don't need all these fangled diets. So it's amazing sometimes that he's in this situation, because anyone who gets to the NFL must have something special about them in terms of their work ethic, their drive, their desire. And yet here's his little kind of chink in the armor, because he obviously has an ongoing problem with it.
Well, let me tell you something. After being in, you know, kind of 23 years of pro locker room, let me just say this. A lot of these guys, when it comes to things like nutrition, they are so far from understanding anything about what goes in their body. Hmm. And they've been basically coddled their whole life. And, you know, it would seem incredulous, right? When you see 7:30 in the morning, these guys show up for work and they got a McDonald's bag, you know, as they come into the complex. Mm. And I mean, I've seen it in the NFL, I've seen it in the CFL, I've seen it at every level of professional football that I play. It's just incredible to me. Incredible to me. You are making so much money, you can hire somebody to cook you the most nutritious, low-fat meal available, right? And yet, you still, it's this ongoing drama about whether you can make weight. I mean, you know what happened? I really truly believe this. The Packers just finally said, enough is enough, right? Enough of the drama, enough of the, you know, the all of it, enough. And, you know, I it's really, to me, it's incredibly frustrating that you see a young kid like this. And what I really worry about, frankly, Neil, is the long term. What if he can't know now? What's it going to be like when he's 45 or 50 years old, right? I mean, you're talking about your health, right? And so it's just one of the educational things that the NFL tries to do with these guys, is to get them to understand you have to take care of yourself. You know, what you put in your body is what you're going to get out of your body, all of it.
Let's take one more question, and it comes from Michael, who says, how much impact does today's offense-friendly rules have on current players getting into the Hall of Fame? He said it seems that some average quarterbacks and receivers can get in. Jeff, I think this is always that thing when you talk about, you know, productivity and numbers and, well, this guy, you know, Peyton Manning and Brett Favre have got 60-plus thousand yards, and, you know, Joe Montana didn't have quite that, and Johnny Unitas even less than that. I mean, I think it depends on the era, doesn't it? And you always have to factor in and really be quite educated in what era certain people play in. You know, I always go back to that Dan Marino year of 1984, and when you think that at the time quarterbacks could get beaten up quite a bit, receivers could still be mugged on the outside, and Dan Marino was the first 5,000-yard passer, 5,084 yards, 48 touchdowns in 1984. I think you have to factor all that stuff in, and maybe now that's why there will be a bit of a logjam at receiver, because 1,000 catches now and 1,000 catches in 10 years is not going to be as valuable as it might have been when Jerry Rice did it.
No, exactly. You cannot evaluate a receiver's number. I'm just talking about his numbers.
Yeah.
Today, with the Jerry Rice, the John Stallworth, the Lynn Swan, the Freddie Biletnikoff, it's a totally different deal. I mean, a totally different deal. Like you mentioned the rules, you mentioned the approach of the game. It's just, some of these guys that are coming out with, you know, video game numbers, I'm not denigrating anybody. I'm just saying it's so difficult to make that comparison over, you know, timeline. That to me, and you talked about Marino, that's what makes what Marino did even more special to me. Because he wasn't protected like they're protected today. His receivers were getting knocked down the field, you know, knocked off about 9 yards down the field, you know. So it is a different game. And so to measure one year against the next, I don't know if that's fair.
No, it's always a dangerous thing to do, to look at those numbers, because the NFL record for touchdown passes in a game is 7, held by Nick Foles. With all due respect, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds terrible to laugh like that, but it's just, that's how bizarre it is.
Yeah,
right.
It is.
I mean, where is Nick Foles right now?
Yeah, sitting on the bench in Philly. You know,
exactly. And so you say, okay, but the guy holds the record for most touchdown passes in a game. Well, great. You know, big deal. He's a backup in Philadelphia. And so, you know, again, it's just, you got to really be cautious when you start, you know, comparing numbers across timelines.
All right, Jeff, we are out of time. We're going to let you get to bed and then to the... How many more days are you in Hawaii?
I'll be here until Saturday we fly back, because we got training camp starting next Thursday. So
all right,
we got to get back.
You're getting
I'm going to be in the water as soon as I wake up tomorrow.
Good man, good man. Don't let those waves take you under. You have fun there. You get a good break before you get into training camp. On training camps, Jeff, I'm going to go straight from this podcast to start planning my trip. 8 teams in 8 days from Los Angeles to Miami. How about that?
You have got to fire whoever that travel agent is. Every year it gets worse. I mean, I swear to God. 8 training camps in 8 days.
Yes.
In 8 different cities.
Yeah, so you film, so you get up in the morning, you go to the teams about 8 o'clock in the morning, you do a few interviews before practice. You watch practice. You bang out a couple of interviews afterwards. You leave at 6 o'clock. You fly at 8. You get to the next hotel at midnight. You get up the next day and bang, away you go again. Rinse and repeat for 8 days. Easy. Just watching film.
Now, let's say, look, the all-time classic to me was when you drove up the entire coast of California.
It didn't look that far.
You drove all night up the coast of California to be at San Francisco's training camp. Hey, let me tell you something, buddy. And I said this, I put this out in a tweet. Nobody grinds like you grind. And if somebody wants to hang with you on the training camp circuit, they better love ball.
Yeah, that trip to San Francisco, I was having breakfast with Jim Tomsula at 9 o'clock. So I was up at 2:30 in the morning. Thought, oh, it's only about 4 hours. It was like a 6-hour drive. So I drove at 3 a.m. and... So everyone told me it was such a beautiful drive. It was pitch black. I didn't see any of the coast.
Middle of the night.
Didn't see anything. Didn't see a thing. And then, arrived there and had breakfast. So, look, yes. I couldn't get to a lot of the teams, because coaches are very flexible in terms of what they do in their June mini camps. And sometimes they call off days and they give players days off. And it just wasn't worth it. I used to do half the teams in June and half in July and August. And I just thought, oh, stuff it. Let's just go for it. So I'm just going to do them all in one go.
Do you know where you're going yet?
I'm going to go to the Rams to start. Cardinals, Vikings, and then I think Browns, Jags, Dolphins, Saints, and then back over to the Ravens for the short hop home. So, yeah, 8 teams, 8 days. Los Angeles to Miami. I will tally up the miles, and I will, by day 3, be thinking I'm an idiot and what have I played at. But there you are.
8 days, 8 teams, 8 cities, 4 time zones.
All right, let's not talk about it anymore. It's depressing me. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk. Enjoy the rest of your time in Hawaii, Jeff. Have fun in the water tomorrow. Say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.